Welcome to Talk Nation Radio and part one of our special series on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla movement.
We are just going there with love for all the people of Palestine, for the people of Israel and all the internationals, and we are just trying to break the blockade.
Once again, peace activists are challenging the Israeli stranglehold on Palestinians in Gaza. 10 more ships are making their way to Gaza with humanitarian aid. Israel has been threatening to board the ships, carrying hundreds of peace activists from many countries. We'll be hearing from Connecticut residents on the Gaza flotilla who are traveling on the ship The Audacity of Hope. Libor Koznar will be joining us to talk about his reasons for making this journey. He is a Central Connecticut State University graduate and co-founder of Art and Struggle, an artist and activist collective. Libor Koznar will be reporting for us at Talk Nation Radio, but he may wind up banned from Israel as a result. The Foreign Press Association is now accusing the Israeli government of using threats and intimidation in an effort to try to stop media coverage of the 10-ship flotilla. They say the journalists traveling with the ship will be banned from Israel for 10 years. Activists on board a ship from Sweden, Greece, and Norway are alleging deliberate sabotage after its propeller was cut off while it sat in the dock in Athens. The group has made repairs. Earlier in the month, Israelis tried to claim that the Audacity of Hope was not seaworthy, but the ship is set to sail with the others anyway, and organizer Anne Wright has said the allegations were a false attempt to detain the vessel and prevent their journey. Peace activists from all over the world will be on board the vessels, including Holocaust survivor Hedy Epstein, now 86 years old. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Alice Walker will be on board the flotilla, as well as Global Exchange founder Medea Benjamin. Israeli Navy commandos have already started conducting drills at sea as they ramp up their military efforts to try to stop the flotilla. Israel asked for U.S. support and got it. As Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said, the Gaza Freedom Flotilla mission was not helpful. U.S. officials have also reminded the flotilla passengers that the Israeli Navy had stopped previous attempts to enter Gaza by sea, resulting in deaths, injuries, and arrests, they pointed out. U.S. and global peace activists say they're deeply troubled by America's inaction as Israel continues to push Palestinians from their homes in East Jerusalem, then construct illegal Jewish settlements. Israel has also been under heavy criticism for its use of excessive force to disperse peaceful protesters. We spoke with Libor Koznar as he was preparing for his journey. He began by explaining that economic pressure was being brought to bear on peace activists, the Turkish government pressured to keep the Mavi Marmara at home.
Israel issued some statement sort of economically blackmailing Turkey. They are saying, if they're going to prevent the Mavi Marmara from going, then they're going to give them some sort of advantage in trading. And it sounded like a blackmail, you know, just openly.
And people are also saying that the Rafah border has been closed, Libor Koznar. What about that? And also the fact that, you know, Israel and Egypt jointly control that border crossing.
I mean, this permanent opening of Rafah border crossing won't last long, even though they call it permanent. Egypt is run by the military, and they heavily rely on the U.S. aid, on the, you know, the money going there, the military supply, and the wages of those officers depend directly on the U.S. government. And Israel just finished the APEC meeting here. You know, whatever Pentagon's going to say, that's how Egypt has to behave. And a lot of people actually was predicting that it won't last long.
It's, of course, a very trying time in the Middle East with tensions at various borders, Syrian refugees swelling. And last year's flotilla was, of course, cut short by Israeli commandos boarding the Mavi Marmara and opening fire, shooting dozens and killing 9 people. Just tell us about the decision-making process here that people have entered into and why this trip is being made.
Since people cannot really rely on the government any longer and international bodies to interfere on what's going on in Gaza and generally in Palestine, people of the civil society decided that they have to act on their feelings and help the people in need. People around the world got together and set up the International Freedom Flotilla. which last year was intercepted by the Israeli military, where 9 people got killed. One 19-year-old U.S. citizen got killed, which the U.S. government actually didn't do anything about it, which was disappointing. So why we do it again? Because by the international standards, it was an act of piracy. They ambushed the boat, hijacked the boat, towed it to the Israeli port against the people's will. There they arrested them, charged them with the trespassing and being illegally in Israel, and deported them back to the places where they came from. 1 year later, a little bit after the anniversary of the last year massacre, people set their boats again on the Mediterranean Sea and head for Gaza, tried to break the siege, the blockade, one more time and challenge the Israeli status quo and try to help people of Gaza get their freedom and get their self-determination back.
Well, we hear from Israel their complaints about the Hamas government in Gaza, but a glaring omission, I think, on Israel's part is the very existence of all the people of Gaza, you know, who are living through this crisis year after year. Israeli officials do continue to mention the crisis for Jews living near the borders, and that's constantly the subject here. So how to break through that other blockade of a lack of media for the people of Gaza? And I think that appears to be the message of some of the people that are going now to Gaza, including someone who's been on our show, Talk Nation Radio, and that's Ridgely Fuller from Boston, a social worker who has made several trips there.
Yes, it is. And even though Hamas was 3 years ago democratically elected, which the whole world recognized or supposed to recognize, just as any other democratically elected government, the state of Israel didn't want to recognize it. They didn't want to work with them. So they imposed blockade on the whole region of Gaza Strip. And they inflicted collective punishment over the whole civil society, which is against the international law. Israel was expecting that by choking, putting people on the diet, preventing food from getting across the border to the people of Gaza, they thought that people going to put some pressure on the Palestinian government and on the elected leaders of Hamas and either overthrow them or elect somebody else, which didn't happen. And instead of that, you have a starving society of 1.5 million people, of which many refer to as the biggest open-air prison in the world.
You know, at slideshows presented locally by people that have visited Palestine, it's hard not to notice how a few people in the audience will be very angry, and it's a disbelief. I mean, they're not understanding what is actually going on there. And perhaps if they did understand, there could be an opening at least between Palestinians and Israeli Jews, you know, without their governments involved, perhaps.
I mean, we have a problem with our mass media. Anytime when the mainstream media talk about the Palestinian-Israeli issue, when Palestinian does anything, for instance, throws Iraq because they are trying to get back home, they are always being labeled as a terrorist. When Palestinian is trying to get to work and they are pushing at the checkpoint and there is an issue, there is a problem, they are being labeled as a security threat. But when the Israelis go there with the tanks or they go bulldozing houses or they just randomly, as they go every other day and shoot at the farmers or at the fishermen, they just call it as a random, you know, military engagement, or they give it all of these fancy words as a security check. So we have to even work on the wording. And we do know that AIPAC has it's one of the strongest lobbies in the United States. 2 weeks ago, when they just met in D.C., 10,000 lobbies from AIPAC met there, and they were discussing what's going to be the general policy and how they're going to present the brand of Israel within the United States and how they're going to lobby our politicians and how it's going to be developed, the general feeling and opinion and image perception of state of Israel within the United States. I'm hoping that with our boat, at a City of Hope, the U.S. boat to Gaza, finally the audience, the TV audience, and the people of the United States going to be able to read about this complex issue, about this problem, and they're going to be connected to this problem. About half of the passengers of our City of Hope are Jewish people, and we are hoping that there are also other Jewish people within the United States going to feel a closer connection to these people, to these activists. We are hoping that it's going to be the beginning of the change and how people behave and how people see within the United States the problem of Palestine and Israel.
Well, many are now describing these trips by Americans to Palestine as something akin to what was done when Americans also traveled to the Deep South during the Civil Rights Movement. And they're starting to describe this in a similar context, having to do with the civil and human rights of Palestinians.
You're absolutely right. It is a continuation, and people on the boat, they feel that it is continuation of the freedom right movement and the civil rights movement and what people do globally. It's not defined anymore within the United States or within the down south. Because of the globalization of the world, even the struggle got globalized, and we do care about each other globally. And so what we are trying to do is the people of Gaza, the civil society, we are trying to get them back their rights and independence and freedom so they could just live their lives as they're supposed to, as they would like to.
We've seen violence again at the crossing in between Israel and Syria. And so Israelis shot protesters, and some of the headlines said that, you know, implied that it was a fight, you know, a battle. However, it was basically people trying to cross and just getting shot, just getting mowed down. So can you talk about the way that's changed the mood, if it has, of your trip on this ship? And it's the audacity of hope.
Yes, we can see the difference. Any of the mainstream media talk about the Arab Spring, well, the uprising and the wanting for independence got even to the Palestine. And actually, Palestine is one of the longest-lasting non-violent resistance. And we've seen a few weeks ago when people of Palestine were commemorating Nakba, the so-called catastrophe of when Israel confiscated Palestinian land and destroyed many hundreds of Palestinian villages. At the celebration a few weeks ago, people were trying to get back to their homes, which are for over 60 years being within a occupied territory, and it's still in the West Bank and within those 1964 borders, and people were trying to get finally home after such a long time, and the Israeli government, the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, started shooting at them and killed many people. And the same thing we saw several days ago when people from the camps in Syria were trying to get home, and they were trying to get across the borders back to Palestine, and they got suppressed, and there was several dozens of dead people.
And so now it looks as if you will nevertheless go, and you will be carrying letters from Americans to the Palestinian people. Can you talk about that? Are these letters to Palestinians?
Yes, most of the boats to Gaza, which are part of the International Freedom Flotilla, and many of them carry humanitarian aid. Some of them carry, among other things, medical aid and dentist supplies, toys, and other utensils, which are so far still prohibited. The U.S. boat actually won't bring any supply in the materialistic sense as the other boats do because of the prohibitions of the U.S. law and regulations. So what we do instead, and so we could still participate and have a strong voice and being part of the civil rights movement and challenging the blockade, is that we are bringing letters from the people of the United States who wrote the letters, and some of them are very artistic, and we are bringing them directly to Gaza. But it's not just the letters. I'm part of the Art and Struggle, that's an artisan activist collective, and we organize a collection of art from other artists around the United States, from artists who talk about Palestine for the last 10, 15, 20 years. Palestine became part of their life, and these artists do social justice art and or political art for the longest time, and they started sending us their posters, images, photography, and so we could take them to Gaza and have an exhibit there. So we got together with the people in Palestine, in Gaza, and we're going to have an art show there with different artists. So on one side, we are bringing these letters, which are each of them personally written by the individual people of the United States, and many of them have a sparkly on it, and drawings and ink and paintings on it, and different collages, and it's beautiful. It's a spectacle itself to just look at the letters. And on the other side, we are bringing this beautiful graphic design, posters and silk screens from different collectives, some of them all the way from California, and the other ones upstate New York, and we're going to have an art show with the artists of Palestine, of Gaza, And what we are trying to do is reconnect with our counterparts, artists in Gaza, and finally see each other as a, you know, as a human beings, and connect on the more humanistic level. And we are trying to connect with the civil society of Gaza. And so when Israel is claiming that we are going there because of Hamas or any another support, that's completely, that's nonsense. That's another of their barrages when they're employing their media tactics and trying to just discredit the whole global movement. The Freedom Flotilla, it's not just the U.S. boat, it's not just the Turkish boat, it's the Irish boat, it's the Canadian boat. There's the people from Germany, Switzerland, Malaysia, and other parts of the world, Greece, Italy. And there's going to be over 1,500 activists from 100 different countries. It is broad spectrum of people from all around the world.
When you look at the shootings at the Syrian border and also the crackdown by Israel on protesters, and these were peaceful protests, it seems as if there's a message being sent out not to organize, not to protest the Israeli government's policies.
Well, it's not just the complication at the Rafah border crossing. After several days ago, Egypt finally reopened its border crossing to Gaza, which they announced was going to be permanent opening of border, and finally the goods going to start pouring in. Well, instead of that, they actually allowed about 300 people to cross a day, and they allowed certain movement of certain consumer goods, such as diapers and detergent and dishwashing soaps. But they completely still did blocked any export. And if you want to have any country living and self-sustainably, the country needs to export its food and products, and that wasn't allowed. And there isn't any movement across the border anymore. It's just funny in the sense, because we are bringing all this art to the Gaza and all of these letters, but at the same time, even though they allowed some of the consumer goods to come into the Gaza, the musical instruments and writing and papers and notebooks were still prohibited. So in that sense, as we are bringing the art instrument and we are trying to reconnect with other musicians and artists and theaters, the people are not able to import in the Gaza music instruments. It is very sad. And, you know, I cannot explain how Israel justifies that a music instrument could be seen as a lethal instrument, or I'm not sure, you know, why they keep it on the list of prohibited things. But the border crossing is permanently again shut down, and there is, people cannot get in and out, food cannot get in and out, and people are starving in that region. And it is 1.5 million of starving people. Majority of the population are kids. It is getting every day worse and worse.
Your ship, the Audacity of Hope, will also be carrying Holocaust survivor Hedy Epstein. She's 86 years old, and she told the New York Times about the journey, quote, "The American Jewish community and Israel both say they speak for all Jews. They don't speak for me. They don't speak for the Jews in this country who are going to be on the U.S. boat and the many others standing behind us." Now, there is also a captain in the Israeli Air Force who is a refuser who will be on the ship. Why don't you tell us about him?
Yes, his name is Yonatan Shapiro, and he used to be captain of the Apache helicopters. And he refused to fly the helicopters over the Gaza and over the Palestine and terrorize the people. And one day he organized other co-pilots of the Apache helicopters, and they refused to fly the helicopters. So gentlemen like him, actually, who represent the IDF, who is a former Israeli Defense Forces soldier, is with us on the boat, and just he's expressing his voices of the Israeli people and the Jewish people. And we could see, not just that, but we could see last week, actually, over the weekend in Israel, they had the biggest demonstration in history of Jewish people, the Israelis in Israel, demonstrating for independence of Palestine and saying that finally the state of Israel should recognize those 1967 borders and pull out of the West Bank and the occupied territory, and to restore the safety of the Israeli people and the Palestinian people. So that's directly linked to the Yonatan Shapiro, who represents the Israeli Defense Forces. I just want to add to that we are not sailing there with any weapons or with anybody or harm anybody or even endanger the Israeli Defense Forces, who's going to be most likely engaging with us or watching us on the sea. We are just going there with love for all the people of Palestine, for the people of Israel and all the internationals. And we are just trying to break the blockade and bring the justice to Palestine. and the independence of the Palestinian people.
Libor Kosner, just tell us about yourself. You know, I know that you've been an activist and you work in the art realm. You're also deeply concerned about human rights issues. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're going?
I'm a co-founder of Art and Struggle, which is an artist and activist collective, and we are focusing on social justice art, which I believe is the biggest artist movement in the history of artist world. And I'm also vice president of the Middle East Crisis Committee, which is a human rights organization. And how did I get involved in the Palestinian struggle? Well, it somehow started over 10 years ago, and when all of the global issues and links of environment and oppression and poverty and the labor struggle and the labor movement somehow linked up together. And I got involved with the Palestinian struggle. And since then, I've been trying to bring the justice to Palestinian people, and I'm fighting on their behalf as well.
What is this fight really about? Because I know a lot of people talk about it as a battle for, you know, Israeli security on that side of things. And then we also hear that people are fighting for land. But it seems as if something much bigger is going on now, especially with the development of this incredible, you know, phenomenon throughout the Middle East in various countries.
And you're absolutely right about that. There is a big sea of change within the whole region. But make no mistake, as it might seem, that it is a conflict about a land. If that would be so, it seems that, or many people think, if you would just put those two people, the Palestinian people and Israeli people, together, and they could start talking to each other, then the problem would be solved. And it seems like anybody could be mediator in this conflict. But the conflict is not just about the land and about two people not liking each other. It's much more complicated than that. It is actually institutionalized racism and apartheid within the Israeli institutions, within the Israeli government, which is a two-tier system, has full citizenship on one side for the Israeli Jewish people. Then they have on the books second-class citizens, which are the non-Jewish Israeli people and the people in occupied territory, which could be anybody, non-believer, Christian, or Muslim. And these people don't have a full rights within the state of Israel and occupied territory. So it is not just, you know, if those people would like in each other, it is more complex problem than that. It is actually institutionalized problem by the laws and system of, you know, of institutionalized racism and the segregation. It's very similar to the apartheid either of South Africa or what was institutionalized within the United States. People have to undo the law. They have to change the laws of and create a constitution which protects people who, as of now, are being segregated. I mean, the system has to be undone, and the racism and the apartheid is a little bit deeper, and it's on the books of the state of Israel.
It seems almost as if the Israeli government does see itself as needing to do that because of the settlement building, partly in Jerusalem, East Jerusalem. But just in general, the Israelis have been really stepping up settlement construction. How big a problem do you think that's going to be to take on? Because it doesn't seem as if the Netanyahu government has any intention of stopping the settlements.
Well, Netanyahu's government doesn't ever have any intention of stopping and slowing down on the building settlements within the state of Palestine, within the occupied territory. And because of that, we can see actually the global movement of boycott and divestment sanctions, the BDS movement, trying to push on the institutions around the world, on the big foundation, on the pension funds, on the big construction building supply companies, and telling them to divest from the occupation. And companies do divest from this occupation. There is a California union who refused to unload Israeli boats. There is in Sweden, there was a union who refused to unload Israeli boats. In New Haven, there is the company Asa Abloy, who's building the infrastructure of East Jerusalem for light rail, who promised that they're going to pull out of their contract, they're going to cancel their contract under the pressure of boycott and divestment sanctions. There is DIA Kraft, the biggest pension fund company, who under the pressure of BDS campaign promised that they're going to divest or sell off the investment of the Israeli companies. The state of Connecticut has purchased from the state of Israel the Israeli bonds in value of $4.5 million. They purchase the bonds, and by doing that, they directly support the violence in occupied territory. So they purchased Israeli bonds in value of $4.5 million. And the state of Connecticut on the books recognized that there is a concept of the global citizenship, and they're trying to obey it. And for those reasons, and because of the bad human rights record, and because of the war crimes, the state of Connecticut divested from the regimes such as Sudan and Darfur, Iran. So if you want to get involved with the struggle of Palestine, pick up the phone and call to the Treasury Department and ask them to start questioning why state of Connecticut is purchasing bonds of state of Israel, who's engaging in these atrocities. I just want to add that our boat is going from the international waters directly to the Palestinian waters, and we will never enter the Israeli waters. And attacking and hijacking our boat would be an act of piracy on the Israeli side again. The Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights Fact-Finding Mission determined that the circumstances of the killing of at least six of the passengers on the board of Mavi Marmara were in a manner consistent with an ex-legal, arbitrary, and summary execution.
You know, finally, I want to ask you about something that one of the students who's going to be on board, a student from the University of Arizona, Gabriel Chavon, said. It's in the tradition of Dr. King's direct action principles to create a situation so tension-packed that it forces the world to look and see what's happening to the Palestinians. Just talk about that statement. That's a very powerful statement coming from a student, don't you think?
And yes, we are a nonviolent organization, and the mission is nonviolent. And it is in the spirit of the freedom riders and the civil rights movement. And let's not disregard Dr. King and the message. He wasn't by himself, and there wasn't just the Rosa Parks by herself making, you know, the act of sitting on the bus. There's actually hundreds of people behind, there's thousands of people behind it who are pushing for the independence of Palestine and for the justice between Palestine and Israel. So it is not just as a single message of Dr. King. There's globally, people around the world are involved in this struggle, and they are calling on United Nations, on their own governments in their countries, and on the United States and the State of Israel to reconcile this issue and give Palestinians their freedom, their independence, the right for self-determination, and give them their own land back. And the Palestinians have to learn how to live with the Israelis. And the Israelis try to learn to live with Palestinians, and their institutions have to evolve their laws and constitutions around each other.
Libor Koznar, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Libor Koznar is heading for Gaza by sea on board the Audacity of Hope. He's co-founder of Art and Struggle, an artist and activist collective. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. The show is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated with Pacifica Network. Special thanks to stations airing the show, either weekly or by topic, including WKMD in Castleoff, Radio Anchorage, Alaska, KQRP LP Salida, California, East Hill Radio AM, Snoqualmie Community Radio, WKNH in Keene, New Hampshire, WSCA Portsmouth, Maine, WZBC Boston College, Newton, Mass, Truth and Justice Radio with Stan Robinson. You can find more at talknationradio.org. Our music is by Fritz Heed.